Spartans! Ready your breakfast and eat hearty. For tonight, we dine in hell!
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Welcome to issue 91 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that tried to dine in hell but couldn't get reservations. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm David Longo.
In this issue, Scarlett Johansson's Avengers scenes get bumped because of baby news. Fox and Marvel are currently discussing joint custody rights. Then it's a new Batman game for Rocksteady, where you get to drive a Batmobile. Also, new releases Starlight, Veil, Magneto, Moon Knight, Headspace, and more, and what we've been reading. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, 300 by Frank Miller and Lynn Varley. This is Behind the Panels. Yes, this is going to be an interesting show, fellas. We're doing...
Richard, that was some good beatboxing you did there.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What can I say?
Dave, your Kanye West was impeccable.
What can I say? I keep it 300, like the Romans, apparently. Kanye, I'm not quite sure if you're aware, it was 300 Greeks, not Romans. So just want to point that out.
But he's a musical genius. He's a musical genius.
He was. Look, that was we are doing a Frank Miller book this week. We're doing 300 for two reasons. One, there's a new 300 film out this week based on an unpublished graphic novel by Frank Miller.
Which I don't think it's based on at all, quite frankly. But,
and second of all, we did a Frank Miller book about a month and a half ago, which was Dark Knight Strikes Again, and it wasn't very good. So we thought we'd do a good Frank Miller book for a change.
We thought we'd do a pre-meltdown Frank Miller book.
So, Frank, this is your chance at web redemption, basically. you know what else needs to be redeemed? Mm-hmm. Vintage clip of the week.
All right.
Meanwhile, tired from the long journey between Mount Olympus and Earth, a slumbering giant blissfully sleeps until he awakes with a start.
Who dares interrupt the slumber of Hercules? An iron mechanical monster halted by a tree. A simple task for the son of Zeus. Stand aside. I shall help you on your way.
What's he, some kind of nut?
A huge railroad crane's the only thing that can lift that tree.
I gotta be dreaming.
Dreaming or not, he's lifting it. He's as strong as Hercules.
Indeed, mortals, I am Hercules.
For the love of Mike, look at that.
It's impossible.
Now perhaps I can sleep undisturbed.
We're going now. Thanks, mister.
Going where?
To the big city. We're already behind schedule.
I love big cities, crowds, merrymaking, excitement, the good life. I shall go too. Hercules commands it.
From now on, whenever you disagree with me on the show, there will be a...
Hercules commands it!
I think you should have, for the love of Mike, permanently...
For the love of Mike!
How easy is it to write music for that kind of thing, hey?
Have you noticed how many of my vintage clips start with, meanwhile? that was actually from that was not one of the obvious clips, that one. That was from a Thor episode.
Really?
From the 1966 Thor cartoon. And
of course it was.
And that was basically there's a challenge. He's done something. Right. He's gone and, you know, spent too much time with Jane again, and he's, you know, and Odin's like,
he's done a little bit too much Jane, you're saying.
Is yeah. At least he didn't do too much Mary Jane. That would be a completely different story. But he, and so, like, you know, there's a challenge from Odin or something.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
One of those things,
and so Hercules turned up and...
Hercules commands it!
So I already love my new sound.
I get what he goes. He actually identifies himself as Hercules and they go, boy, he's as strong as Hercules.
For the love of Mike. Poor Mike. Well, look,
that clip was old.
The very definition of vintage.
I want you, actually, speaking of sound bites, I want that. From now on, I want you to pull that off and have, that clip was old. That was old. It'll be up there with my, it's really dark in here.
It's really dark in here.
You know, we've got a stack of books that we read this week, so let's not waste any more time. Let's get straight into them with what we've been reading.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Okay, I will.
We read a lot between various lines this week. I want to start off with a book that actually took me by surprise the most, which was Starlight, number one.
Me too. Yeah, I wasn't expecting it.
Starlight, this is the new Mark Millar book from Image Comics. It's a new mini-series, and from the cover and from all the publicity to it, it looked as though it was going to be a Flash Gordon clone.
Mm.
But it's so much more than that. Well, and it's a little bit John Carter.
Starts as a Flash Gordon clone. So your first two pages are you going, okay, what am I getting myself into? And suddenly he wakes up and he's in this what looks like a dingy apartment.
And he's much older.
And he's much older. And you're kind of going, what the hell am I reading now all of a sudden? It's a completely different book.
It's quite cool because it's basically the story is that when he was younger, he was a space astronaut of some kind.
Space astronaut.
During this time, he got taken to another place of some kind. He came back and he claimed that he'd been in another world.
And he's got newspaper articles all over his house, basically all the claims in the newspapers, basically saying that he's a crackpot and everything else.
Yeah, and then, but then something happens that, you know, eventually these worlds start colliding.
And it's interesting because up until the last couple of pages of this book, which we won't spoil what the last couple of pages are, but up until that time, you actually kind of start to believe that maybe he's a bit nuts because all of the flashbacks all seem to be dreams.
Yes.
They always seem to be him waking up. Mm. And him kind of, he's been
but
back
again,
in this world.
But again, where issue one ends, it could still be a hallucination.
Is true, except there's that one shot I love. It's near the end of the book. It's about three quarters of the way through. All the newspaper articles, but the camera angle has now pulled back a little bit. So you can see his wardrobe and his spacesuit is hanging in the wardrobe.
Yes, I thought
that's a really lovely composition.
Yeah, well, he did go to space. We know that much, but it's, yeah. You mean his other world.
His other world spacesuit. His Flash Gordon spacesuit.
Look, it's a really good book. I want to know where this goes. Look, being Mark Millar, we've seen some of his miniseries, you know, go down and come up, but he seems to work best in these short formats. So
and when
I'm
when he
to...
strikes, as we reviewed Superior, when he does it right and he keeps it tight and keeps the story moving, these can be really incredible showpieces, you know.
One of the other books that came out this week from Dark Horse was a really interesting one called Veil.
I think you're just to see this one.
By Greg Rucker. I'm just going to just hold up for you guys because you haven't seen it yet, some of the artwork in this thing, which is absolutely stunning.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's basically about this woman who wakes up in the sewers on the subways of, I guess, a major city. I think it might be New York. And she's completely naked, doesn't know where she is.
You had me completely. Okay.
Doesn't know where she is, and she's talking no sense. You know, she'll just say things like hat, bat, cat, mat, ha, ha, ha. You know, and just sort of go off. And you know, she walks up into this like red light district, and everyone starts hitting on her. And this one guy goes, "Guys, can't you see that she's confused?" Puts a coat around her, takes her home. But then stuff starts going wrong. You know, from there. So we don't know who she is. She's someone. She's got some sort of abilities.
Is this limited or ongoing?
I think this is limited, but. Apparently, Greg Rucker has been working on the concept for a while. Look, the artwork in here is absolutely gorgeous. It's this sort of digital painted combo that looks like it's by Tony Fazula. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But I really, really urge people to check this out because this looks like an original Dark Horse series that Dark Horse really seem to be pushing new original series now rather than just their licenses, which is what they've been concentrating on the last few years. But now I guess since they're losing Star Wars and those kind of things, we'll be seeing far more of these. And the fact that this is Greg Rucker, who's been doing great things for all sorts of companies, definitely one to watch. I highly recommend at least looking at the first issue of this. Just while we're on the topic, that's why we're here, someone was asking me this week on Twitter that they were looking for a couple of Dark Horse books and they couldn't find them. Dark Horse have their own app.
Yes.
So go if you're looking in Comixology, go look for the Dark Horse app instead. But while we're speaking of Comixology, just a big PSA out there, Comixology emailed all users this week that they were hacked, and they're advising everybody who has a Comixology account to change their password immediately.
Oh, okay, I better go change my password.
Just go and do that.
Also, going to throw out another PSA now. I haven't got confirmation on this yet, but if everybody wants to go out and experiment with this, apparently Image Comics is experimenting with the way that 2000 AD was.
Yeah.
Apparently, you can buy Image Comics on their site now, which are DRM-free.
Yes, they are.
So this might be the way to be looking at Image Comics.
I've done at least one on that. It's absolutely right. So that's Image... are really pushing it in areas that the other two need to catch up with. I mean, you know, DC and Marvel got there first with digital, but you know, Image are being innovative.
Look, it's going to be the way of music. The DRM will eventually drop from this stuff, so...
Damn straight it will. Now, but speaking of the big two, let's have a look at probably the two biggest Marvel titles that came out this week were also two of the best ones of the all-new Marvel now to
date. Hands down.
There was Cullen Bunn's Magneto number one, and Warren Ellis's Moon Knight number one. Now, I keep using Moon Knight as the butt of a joke, or as the punchline of a joke. This book, but to be honest, I've never really read much Moon Knight. I'm sold hook, line, and sinker now based on this.
I love the fact that they're playing with the idea that he might just be nuts.
Yes.
You know? Quite frankly, he might just be nuts.
He's nuts, and I love the fact that they keep playing on the fact that, you know, you just wear completely white. People are going to see you coming. Yeah, that's the idea.
That's the idea. He goes, I kind of like that part.
Yeah.
You know? I like the fact he's ditched the costume, detective. Too. He's just literally wearing a white suit with a bag on his head.
They keep referring to it as a bag on his head. Yeah. I really, really like this take. It's a gritty, with a really dark sense of humor to it, don't you think?
Yeah. Like the detectives, you know, that are they just don't care.
I also love his intro when he walks up and he goes, isn't that Moon Knight? He goes, well, if it was, then we'd have to be going through all of this process because he's a known vigilante. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He goes, or we could just talk to him.
They would just call him Mr. Knight.
Mr. Knight. Yeah. They call him Mr. Knight.
Oh, that's great. That was in stereo, Dave. Yeah.
We planned it from the beginning.
Nothing is planned on the show.
I also like the fact that he's got a Google limousine. Apparently a self-driving limousine.
Yeah. The other book that came out from Marvel, of course, as we mentioned, is Cullen Bunn's Magneto. Magneto. Now, this is a really, really, really interesting take on the character.
I love the cover, by the way. Can we just talk about the cover for a second?
The cover.
With the barbed wire helmet.
It's great.
Oh, it's amazing.
Magneto is one of those characters that everyone knows because he's been in film, he's been in television, he's been, a staple of X-Men for years. But this version starts off with a great set piece, which is this barista telling the story of this guy that came into a cafe. He could hear the conversation going on, and then the next thing he knew, the guy ripped the fillings out of the other guy's teeth, ripped the fillings out of his teeth without, you know, just use it with a gesture, and then he went outside and replaced them.
Yeah,
and then you see this guy like pinned in the street with all this metal just shoved straight down,
which looks exactly like a shot from 300.
It really does.
Yeah, it really does,
and which it sets the tone of this book straight off. But then you see this really broken down in his luck, living out of a motel, Magneto, talking about all the names that he's gone under, but none of it matters because it's what I've done.
The most fascinating thing about this book for me was, if you've been listening to the last few issues of this show, I've been saying I'm kind of done with X-Men at the moment, and I'm not really interested in reading. It's not that I don't like them, I'm just kind of over it. This actually makes me want to go back and read the most recent X-Men's to find out how Magneto got here.
Yeah, actually, and to be honest, that was the only thing coming into this is like, why is Magneto a bum now?
Well, I was about to say, last time I read an X-Men book, was five issues ago or something like that, Magneto was Scott Summers' right-hand man.
Yeah, he was like the star of Uncanny X-Men, so I've got to catch up on that. But I'm still reading the only X-Men book I'm reading right now is all new, but only because it's tying in with Guardians. Yeah. But this ends really well. It's got, I won't spoil the twist in it, of the other prisoner that he goes to save. But this is real, and there's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful shot of him suiting up in
the helmet
prison,
pulling helmet together
from scraps of metal, you know. And it's really, really.
And that scene with the cleaner at the hotel, where she walks off and she gets on the phone, and he immediately goes out and says, "Did you forget something?" And gives her money, but because he thinks she's calling him in, and then he walks back and goes, "Getting paranoid, old man."
Have you guys ever seen the George Clooney movie, The American?
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels a lot like that.
It does.
You're absolutely right. Or like a Luc Besson.
That's bang on. That's it. Really great pull there. I think that's exactly it. The artist is really great. Gabriel Hernandez Walter. but I think the colouring in this is phenomenal. Mm. This is Jordi Belair, who along with Matt Hollingsworth is probably one of the best colourists working for Marvel at the moment.
Yeah.
So definitely go and check this one out. If you're an X-Men fan, it's a must read.
But if you're out of X-Men, this is the book to bring you back.
Bring you back in. It, like, you know, like the other Marvel books at the moment, it's taking a different approach to yes. characters by keeping them grounded in their personalities. Which brings us to She-Hulk.
I was about to say, like in Moon Knight, it actually starts, they're all starting the same way, too.
Yes.
With Moon Knight, the little blurb at the beginning says, blah, 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 blah. It says, this is what happens next.
Yes.
And it's like, and this seems to be the mantra of Marvel at the moment is, this is what they do in their free time. This is what happened next. This is what happened. It's like, it's this move on from that, you know, from whatever was in the past.
I'm going to run through a couple of other indies that I read this week, just because I don't think you guys have read them yet. And before we move on to the DC stuff, Evil Empire came out from Boom. This is a really interesting one because it's about this sort of rock star who's really anti-establishment, and this presidential candidate befriends her. And it's kind of like, what was that movie? I'm trying to remember. There was like a presidential movie. Was it The Candidate? Where it was just not The Candidate. It was a movie where he just decided to go out and tell the truth.
So you're thinking of the Robert Redford film?
Yeah, the Robert Redford
film. Candidate. Yeah.
Candidate, I was right, yeah. And it's kind of like he's that sort of character. He's sort of like, he's almost drawn a little bit like Robert Redford, but a younger version of
him.
Right. And, you know, he kind of starts wanting to get to know her, but then there's this murder, there's a murder involving the other presidential hopeful, and it all sort of gets, and then there's this big twist at the end, and I kind of don't quite know where this is going or whether it's just too many strands thrown in at once, but I'll stick around for a second issue. Evil Empire from Boom. Go and check that out. I mentioned it last week and I'll mention it again. Headspace from Monkey Brain. This is from our good friend Ryan K. Lindsay. Fantastic book. It's going to be monthly, digitally. So if you haven't checked out Monkey Brain Comics yet, go and check them out. This was a really great one. It's about a sheriff in a small town who suddenly realizes that everything in the town is the product of a headspace of a killer.
Oh, okay,
so cool. It's quite a very cool book. She-Hulk, which we mentioned, She-Hulk I'll mention quickly because we covered the first book extensively, but keeps up the same tone. It's really fun. This is another, Javier Pulido art is amazing. Charles Soule's story is great.
And probably the only superhero book you're going to read where they go out and fight crime where one of them is drunk.
Drunk, yeah. Hellcat.
Hellcat, you know, drunk
and
as a skunk.
And it's one of those books like Hawkeye and like, yeah. I'm deliberately calling it a Hawkeye. Like Hawkeye, even like Daredevil or like any of those books in the all new Marvel now, they're just, you know, acknowledging the fact that some of these characters aren't that famous, you know, it's okay. Then also in some of the indies, there was Rogue Trooper that came out from IDW this week. It's a little bit, you know, Starship Troopers, a little bit Battlestar Galactica. I couldn't really get into it. Actually, Tales of Honor is more like Battlestar Galactica, which is another indie that came out this week. Didn't mind this so much. I don't know the series, but it's based on apparently an old set of science fiction novels. You'll love this, David. The race in it or the group in it are called the Manticore.
Oh, right! I think we need one right now.
Yeah.
Moist Manticore.
look, but let's jump over to DC because Dave Longo has been catching up on Forever Evil. Forever Evil number 6 came out this week.
Which I thought was the end, but it wasn't.
No.
that's why I caught up.
There's one to go, but it did promise the final fate of Nightwing, but it doesn't really give us the final fate of Nightwing. It gives us
spoilers.
It gives us the temporary fate of Nightwing. Yeah. It introduces as a new character. How much spoiling are we going to do here?
None
yet. Let's let the series finish.
Next month or the month after, whenever it finishes, we're going to do Forever Evil as a pick. Mm-hmm. This was a pretty good issue. There's a lot happened. This shows you that in the main Forever Evil title, that's where all the stuff happens.
Yeah, and we should say, when we do the pick, we'll be talking about the Forever Evil title, not all the tie-ins, because the tie-ins have actually proved to be monotonous at best.
Trust me, I read all the tie-ins this week, and they are... Yeah. They're completely superfluous.
Except for the Metal Men.
But that's, I mean, we want to see what happens with this.
But that'll
now.
Be explained in two panels in Forever Evil 7, so we'll be okay.
Oh, look, the Metal Men are here. Yeah. Oh, they've gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
See Justice League.
Yeah, little asterisk.
Just a bit of spoilers, the guy who invented the Metal Men, he's pretty sad.
He's always sad.
There you go.
Speaking of the asterisks, I can't remember which book it was I read this week, but they did, it could have been Evil Empire, but it could have been one of the later ones that I read, but they... it might have been Tales of Honor, and they had a little asterisk, and then asterisk equals, and then they go and show you all the backstory because it's the first issue, and I really like that.
I guess we should say about Forever Evil just quickly that there are good bits in it.
Look, the actual...
But it's kind of like being on a train, you know? Like, you can enjoy a train ride.
But you're going to have a nap at some point.
But you're going to get to work eventually, you know?
Yeah. And you're going to pass cows only so many times,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we know the ultimate destination is Future's End, which kicks off in May.
Really good artwork, though, I think.
Look,
in the actual
David Finch is doing the artwork on that. Yeah, no, look, David Finch and, like, Brian Hitch, those guys are, like... Probably in terms of that mainstream style of art, and I'm going to put Nicola Scott into that bowl
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of that mainstream style of art, top of the game.
Yeah,
like really, really great blockbuster events. You know,
and who's the artist who does? I just clicked in my mic. Who does the artwork for Harley Quinn? Also,
sensational. Chad Harden, yeah. I think is the name of the artist there. But I wouldn't even go so far as to call that super mainstream because it's
a Connor style. Yeah,
it is. But you know, it's mainstream ish. But it's
so you're thinking of the Jim Lee, the classic.
Yeah, yeah. Like the stuff that they tend to put on the posters or base statues on. You know?
Yeah.
Look,
what's happening with Pandora and Phantom Stranger? Do you follow what's happening?
I would know if I'd read either of them.
They've been running around with Constantine and the Justice League of America, but I have no
idea.
I'm reading Justice League Dark
and I'm reading Pandora. I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. Yeah. It's like after Trinity War, how does this not? Anyway, sorry, listeners.
Very, very. we could have our own conversation here on air, but we won't.
We're doing a show.
we were. I'll very quickly mention the other two books I read this week. Green Lantern 29 and Green Arrow 29. Green Arrow, again, it's a good book on the face of it, but again, I'm having problems with the fact that they're overcomplicating this origin thing far too much, and there's these clan war things going on. It's actually kind of cool what's happening. For some reason, it lost me last month, and I haven't quite come back.
The problem I have with Green Arrow is that I love the art, and I love Jeff Lemire, but ever since it lost me before Lemire, I've just had such trouble getting back into it. It's kind of like, you know, that whole idea, you know, you're in a relationship, they cheat on you, and then you just can't trust them again, you know?
Yes, so, yes, I understand.
Yeah, that. And so I'm having trouble trusting the book.
You know? But it's under new management. They've changed, man.
They've changed.
Like Green Lantern's good. Again, it's a different
Has
writer.
Baz come back yet?
Actually, yes.
Oh, okay.
In this issue, I think he must have been floating around in one of the other books, the other Green Lantern books.
Well, there's so many of them.
But he actually, because Hal Jordan's about to head off into space for a war, and he leaves Baz with his brother to say, look, he'll look after you.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So they've left the token guy on Earth, basically, while they go off and have them. It's really, like, it's a really obvious that, like, they don't know what to do with this character now, so they've just left him on Earth while they go off to do their intergalactic
stuff. It's like this great initiative to introduce Baz, and then once Baz was introduced, it's like, okay.
Because in the next panel, I go, for the first time ever, we don't have a Green Lantern patrolling Sector 2814, the first time in history, and it's like, but you just left Baz on Earth. That's Sector 2814.
And he's a Green Lantern, so theoretically he's whatever.
Anyway, next week you will be seeing, this is the 12th of March releases, we will be seeing Batman 29,
yes.
Batgirl 29, yes. Which will be fantastic. We'll be seeing Justice League of America 13. Yeah. We'll be seeing a new book from IDW called Returning, number one. It's a miniseries. Interesting enough, they're doing, following on from TV series, they're doing a $6 million man season 6.
So this isn't related to Kevin Smith's Bionic Man?
No, this is going back, I think this is like, there must have been 5 seasons of the original show. This is season 6.
Oh my God.
So it's that kind of thing. I don't know why. There's a new Crow book called The Crow Pestilence, number one. But there's also the tie-in to the X-Files conspiracy, The Crow number one. The X-Files conspiracy, Crow number one. There is a
Can
new...
we just do a follow-up on that Transformers X-Files? I read it. It was a massive disappointment.
Yeah. it wasn't good. As I said last week... actually, I don't know if I use those exact words. So go back and check the tapes.
Well,
people.
Yeah, listen.
There's a new.
What, we're recording this?
Yeah, that's what I like. This is pretty much just a structured conversation between geeks. That's all we do. There's a new Steve Niles miniseries. Steve Niles, you'll know, is a bit of a horror maestro. He's doing a new book simply titled Monster and Madman. East of West number 10 is coming out next week. Mercenary C. I think I spoke about the first issue a few weeks back. Walking Dead number 123 is coming out next week. All New X-Men number 24, which is part 5 of Trial of Jean Grey. Or
how many parts is it?
It's 6. So it's got that and the next Guardians of the Galaxy to go. But there will be 3 new number 1s next week from Marvel. There'll be Avengers Undercover number 1. Sounds sexy. Secret Avengers number 1, because there weren't enough Avengers books. And Captain Marvel number 1, which is basically Kelly Sue coming back, relaunching the book for the all-new Marvel now.
That's what I've been waiting for.
So I'm very excited about that as well. Until then, we're going to have a bit of news. What do you reckon about that, boys? Right. Let's do it.
In the event of my death, I hereby declare that all my worldly possessions pass to my son, Bruce Wayne. Do not be frivolous with this wealth. Please do not waste it all on fast cars and outrageous clothes and the pursuit of a destructive lifestyle.
And as you just heard, Rocksteady have announced the finale to the Arkham video game series with Batman Arkham Knight. It promises a bigger map of Gotham, the return of Kevin Conroy, a new character from Geoff Johns, and the chance to finally drive the Batmobile.
Talk about frivolous and fast cars. Lena Dunham from TV's Girls has announced that she will pen some upcoming issues of Archie. What?
Louise Simonson will helm an IDW Cartoon Network crossover called Super Secret Crisis War. I love the title. Including the Powerpuff Girls, Samurai Jack, Dexter's Laboratory, Ed, Edd n Eddy, and more.
Lionforge Comics will launch its digital offerings with a new comic based on the 1980s TV series Miami Vice.
Disney and Marvel will release a new comic from Jim Zub and Philippe Andre based on the Walt Disney World character Figment. Love that little dragon.
Malaysia's Home Ministry has banned the Ultraman, the Ultra Power comic book, saying it contains elements detrimental to public order.
Scarlett Johansson scenes for Avengers.
Age of Ultron!
That gets bigger every time. Have reportedly been fast-tracked following the announcement of her pregnancy.
TV's Gotham has added 13-year-old touch actor David Mazouz as the young Bruce Wayne and Cameron, Bicondova as the teenage Selina Kyle.
Three more have joined the cast of NBC's Constantine pilot, speaking of train wrecks, including Lucy Griffiths, Harold Perrineau from Lost, and Charles Holford.
Walt! The Flash casts Patrick Sabungui, I hope, Central City Police Captain David Singh.
That was pretty good. Finally, the trailer for the highly anticipated Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller, hey, it's his week, film Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, drop this week. Let's have a listen.
Just another Saturday night.
Power is a fragile thing.
Staring me up how much I love you.
Dwight, is that you?
What I gotta do?
She owns me.
She was an angel.
When she wishes it, we die.
One of these days she'll pull the trigger.
It's a good game.
Well, I don't know about you, but it looks like a Sin City film.
Yeah, it smells like a Sin City film.
It sounds like a Sin City film.
Almost all the cast members are back.
That there's a dame to kill for.
Eva.
Sin City's where you go in with your eyes open.
Eva.
Or you don't come out at all.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I think I'll go and see
that. Was
that
supposed to be in black and white?
I don't think they got it right because they're like bits in colour.
Bits were in colour.
I think there's a bad mix on that.
I don't know, understand what was happening. But, you know, just another Saturday
I've been waiting for this film for a very long time, so.
You're the only one, Dave.
I loved the first one.
So it was like, I was looking it up, 2005. It's been 9 years.
It's taken them a while to get there.
It's been three Spy Kids films.
It's been three. It's been four Rodriguez trilogies. You know, I think it has been. Look, I'm really excited because we're doing a Frank Miller book this week, so I'm glad this trailer dropped this week. But
do you think there was a coincidence that this dropped the same week that?
No, it's running in front of it, apparently.
Oh, right. So, say, about 300 Rise of an Empire came out.
So. Oh, no, they know how to market this stuff. Yeah. No, look, this is just directed by Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller. Quentin Tarantino isn't involved this time around. You'll notice
I don't think Frank Miller was that involved either.
No.
I mean, he was there.
Present.
Yeah. You look at this film, you go, this is a... If you want to see
and
Frank Miller...
And everything he learned, yeah.
If you want to see a Frank Miller film, go watch The Spirit.
Or don't.
Or don't.
Do watch The Spirit. That is a film.
Spirit.
It is a film.
To quote,
I got eggs on my face.
To quote, I think it might be Bobby Brown from the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. Spirit. Some people hear it. Some people fear it. Spirit. Some people just won't go near it. go check out your history, people. But now I think it's time. But speaking of historically inaccurate, let's go check out this week's pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Almost as legendary as the Spartans themselves, Frank Miller and Lynn Varley's 300 is a modern classic. A fictional retelling of King Leonidas and his 300 Spartans holding off the Persian invasion at Thermopylae. It's told in the inimitable style of Miller's trademark Blood, Bodies and Blades, winner of 3 Eisner Awards, and spawning 2 Hollywood adaptations. This is history remixed. This is Miller at his most visceral. This is madness. This is 300.
This is Sparta!
Yes, it is. That line, the funny thing is, since that movie came out, that line has become so highly recognizable as being attached to that film. Everything, all those iconic scenes, which are straight out of this book we're doing this week.
Not just iconic scene, iconic dialogue. Snyder, for his script for the movie, literally just opened the book and said, take it,
these
take
are
it,
our
take
storyboards.
It, take it. Exactly. Yeah. And this is a script.
Including my favorite line is like, you know, tonight we dine in hell. But I always want someone to just do a dub of that scene. Where it's like, tonight we dine in hell. And there's a voice comes up from the back. Oh, can't we go somewhere nicer? You know, I've always wanted that to happen.
I love the this is Sparta line, actually, because when I watched the film again last night, the first film. And
yes,
I
watched it again 2 days
and
ago.
And I just love the fact that the delivery of that line, because everybody talks about this is Sparta. The envoy says to him, this is madness. And Gerard Butler, actually under his breath, turns around and goes, this is madness?
Yeah.
He goes, no, this is Sparta.
I know, it's a great scene because you forget how much tension is building up for those first few minutes. And in fact, we won't spend too much time talking about the film, but you know, you pointed this out before the show, David, that when we went and saw the sequel this week, or the prequel / sequel / remake / parallelogram, it's called it,
which we're actually going to talk a little bit more on in GMC. So listen to this week's GMC. Yes. We're going to talk about the sequel because it is interesting to talk about that sequel.
Yeah, but so we won't dwell on it here. But suffice it to say that this the two films are actually very different films. The style has been aped for the second, but we're loath to say this, but Snyder's got much better control of his craft in this,
which I would never have thought of. And that's the funny thing is going back and watching this movie again. Snack's style is actually under more control.
Yeah, sorry, for new listeners, the official term for Zack Snyder is Snack.
Snack, yeah. he's much more controlled than his brethren, I guess, the person who's taken over the directing.
Absolutely.
But anyway, that's the film. We'll talk about it more in GMC. Let's talk about this book, though, because this book is, first of all, huge.
Now, we want to say, like, you can read this digitally. And in fact, I think Comixology, every time a new Frank Miller book comes out, slashes the prices of the digital copies in half. They're doing it right now this weekend.
I think, Dave, you actually consumed this digitally.
I did, yes. Yeah. Now, I actually got about 10 pages in on the iPad, and then I read it on the computer screen.
Yeah. And
I had to, because it's just too beautiful a book not to read.
You do need it. If you're reading it digitally, you have to read it on a big wide screen, or you have to get this beautiful 80-something page hardcover, which is phenomenal. It was originally released as 5 issues, but the big hardcover widescreen, the landscape
amazing.
Format, is beautiful. This is the ideal way of reading it. The artwork is, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Miller doing Dark Knight Strikes Again, about the point where he, somewhere between the late 90s and 2001, and we know the point with September 11, his priorities and his art and everything about him changed.
Yeah.
This, to me, and you talked about the way women were drawn in Dark Knight Strikes Again, Dave. The way women are drawn in this is as gods, as, you know, as goddesses. Mm. They are, you know, Queen Gorgo is just as powerful as...
Oh, and the Oracle is gorgeous.
And the Oracle is gorgeous, you know, and equally so in the film as well.
Yeah.
But this is... I said it was history remixed in the intro because this is not a completely 100% historically accurate book. Alan Moore actually criticized at the time, this is not The actual, from what we know, I mean, look, you know, it's ancient history, so we have some documents. But you know, this book is just as much influenced by the 1960s film, The 300 Spartans. Frank Miller's gone out as much, you know, and said this as much, and than it is by history. It's his memories of the feeling that he had from watching that film.
It's also,
that's what he's trying to evoke.
Absolutely,
here.
He's also Miller's done a really interesting thing, and this is also mimicked in the film version as well. But in the book, what he's done is he's taken history and then he's given it a fantastical element to it. So the Persians, for instance, are portrayed as, Xerxes is portrayed as a 10-foot tall god. And
yes,
he has all these strange and wonderful creatures who work for him, and the, you know, the whole immortals and everything else. And so you sit there, but I know what Miller's going for here. Miller is basically saying to the Spartans, this is what they're seeing.
This is in the back of the book. Dave's just pointed out to me that there is a list of four historical texts that you should go and check out. And I did actually, I remember when I first read this, I remember actually going back and reading one of these. I think I actually read, if memory serves, I went and read, and we're talking when the movie came out, so we're talking back in 2005, yep, 2006. I think I read, from memory, it was William Golding's The Hot Gates.
Right.
Which is what Thermopylae means. Look, this is, and as you said, this is interpretive history. Like one of the criticisms, you know, when he says things like, you know, those Athenians, the boy lovers, you know, when in fact Spartans would actually keep small boys with them, and they would keep them as basically sex slaves, as much as they would, you know, would be warriors. It was this kind of weird relationship, weird from our perspective, that this would be this kind of non-homosexual sexual relationship that they would have with,
well, let's
these
not beat around the bush. Well, Spartans were wackos.
They believed they were descended from Hercules.
That's right. They believed they were descended from Hercules. They ditched any child that they felt was not going to grow up to be a perfect specimen of warrior. You can imagine, the baby is born, they examine, they go, no, toss that one.
but look, you know, Frank Miller's creation here is just as much a creation of the kind of myths that inspired this. It's the legend of the Spartans, the
yes,
300 Spartans. That's what we're seeing here. We see it's so much about storytelling that there's a character in here who tells stories. And so you have to remember when you're reading this to remember it as a story being told to you.
But
by
it's being
someone
recounted.
Being recounted, exactly. Yeah. We start out with the being, you know, the story of his of Leonidas's first encounter with a wolf when he became a man, when he had to slay this wolf, and how that informed his strategy, his
thinking.
And you
have to think that that's a story told to the storyteller who's now telling it as a story. So
yes,
there's going to be fabrication, there's going to be inaccuracies. The entire finale of the story has
yes
to be had to be pieced together because the storyteller wasn't there.
Exactly.
Because he was sent back. He was sent back to basically rally the troops about the brave 300 doing what they did.
Because ultimately the 300,
spoilers for real life people.
you know, sacrificed themselves so that Greece would unite against the Persian Empire.
Yeah.
Which is in many ways where the sequel.
I was about to say, the second film is much more about that.
And you have to remember, while this is happening, the rest of Greek are fighting battles. Mm. You know, the Athenians are fighting the navy, which again is what is covered in 300 Rise
of
an Empire.
The Persians were attacking Greece. Sparta was one city state in a greater Greece, and all the city states were independent. And Greece wasn't a united country at this point. And the whole concept of what King Leonidas was actually trying to do was trying to unite them, was trying to get everybody to get up and fight. And maybe their sacrifice was
yes
what was needed.
Now, this in a post-9/11 world, the film certainly was depicted as, you know, the West fighting back the Arabic hordes.
Absolutely.
This book was written in 1998.
Yeah.
So Miller has since accepted that interpretation of it.
Of course he has.
but that is not, this was not the intention here. This, I don't think it was. I don't know what Frank's feelings were to the East.
I think Frank was trying to tell a piece of history.
He was.
I think he went, here's a really great battle. Mm-hmm. It's a battle that's got sacrifices. I mean, this story
There's nothing in the book that points to that.
No, this story has... The story of the 300 has everything you want in a big adventure film. And then he went, and I can make it stylized. I can make it bloody. I can make it this. And he just went balls to the wall and said, let's do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And he wrote his interpretation of... The Battle of the 300. Mm. And it's an amazing story.
And it's big, bold, and bloody, but it's also funny sometimes. Yeah. It's wicked in its sense of humor sometimes. You know, just the casual killing. I think you pointed out, David, one of the scenes you like, it's taken straight out of the book and into the
put
movie.
Put into the movie, yeah, where he's eating the apple.
Yeah, he's eating
the
apple.
While his men casually, are killing off all the men in the background. Right. It's like...
It's wonderful. And I think you're right. And the version, the film is completely faithful to this because... It lifts the visual style.
Yes. And we also have to point out that this was one of the first films to ever do this as well.
Yes, very much
so. So, no, I mean, when things like Sin City came out and everybody talked about the visual.
Was Sin City first? I think this was 2006. I think Sin City came out the year before.
Was it, or was it the year after? Can you look that up for me? But this was one of the first times.
I think Sin City was first, but
this was one of the first times big budget Hollywood film where they basically said, let's just stylize the crap out of it, you know? And to Zach's credit, he was absolutely right to do it that way.
I think that was the intention, wasn't it? Because he wanted it to look exactly like that.
Absolutely. So he was completely enamored with the source material, and he said that this is a film. Mm. And if we can make this a film, we're on the right track. And he did. And there are a lot of people who criticize the movie, and I guess the book as well, as basically being war porn. And it is in many ways, you know what I mean? I mean, it is just, it is a giant bloody battle that they've managed to structure a story around.
Yeah, Sin City came out 18 months before.
18 months. So there you go. Well, they would have been being made about the same time then.
Yeah, look, I mean, Sin City had been floating around for a while because Rodriguez had that little sample video that he'd been shopping around. But I think it's one of those things.
It was an eventuality, hey? It's one of those things. It's like the digital cameras were just...
Exactly. It was that sort of Hollywood synchronicity where comics were hot because of the success of things like Spider-Man and the X-Men and all that sort of stuff. People were adapting a lot of comic books around the mid-2000s. They still are. But this was the start of the real kind of let's adapt anything that's out there when you got really interesting adaptations like Road to Perdition and all those kind of things started coming out. But I think those two films kind of at the same time, both based on Miller's, interestingly enough, both tried to ape the visual style.
Both succeeded incredibly well
because I think... Frank Miller's work lends itself so much because his influences, and you can tell quite literally with this book, is very much influenced by cinema because it was influenced just as much by his memory of 1960s cinema adaptation of the 300 story as it was by the history itself. And the fact that this is actually laid out in this widescreen kind of format lends itself to cinema. So I think what you have here is, and I think people like Miller and Moore always said that, you know, Hollywood will be coming to us for their inspiration eventually. And this is a perfect example of it. You know, you have examples of, you know, works from Alan Moore like Watchmen, which were deliberately written to not be filmable, you know, in any way, shape or form. And Zack Snyder, same director, actually managed to make a crack at it. And I think an okay one.
And let's not forget that he got Watchmen because of this film. Yeah.
But... At the same token, this is one of those books that is designed purely to be a visual feast. There's a great story behind this and the dialogue is crackling, but visually, this is sumptuous. Yeah. This is beautiful.
Put it this way, this is not a book that you sit down and go, read, 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 read. You're literally just savoring every page.
It's 88 pages, but it'll take you the time to read, exactly a book twice that long because every page has got... In fact, the page I've just opened up is just this massive army scene.
You could hang every page in an art gallery.
You really could.
It is a glorious piece of work.
He almost could have got away with it without any dialogue at all.
I mean, we were fortunate we got to read this in one hit. I wasn't really reading books as much at the time this came out in singles. Can you imagine reading this?
Well, funny thing is,
when
the movie came out, I had not actually read 300. I didn't know the book at all.
Do you guys know if the singles were in that format?
I think so. I think they would have been, but I'll have to.
Yeah, we have to look that one up. But yeah, and when I saw the film, I went, "Wow, this is amazing!" And I saw a documentary about the making of it, and they're showing panels from the book, and I went, "I've got to read this book," you know.
Yeah.
And it's one of those books that's taken me a long time to get to, And I'm so glad I've got it now, though. It's just, it's one of those pieces where you can just go back and just view over it anytime. Dave, we haven't heard much from you.
Yeah. I love the book. I love the book so much, actually. Yeah, the artwork is amazing. The story's great. But the thing with 300 was I really didn't like the film. I've only seen the film once, but I think I sort of owe it more to, because 300 was one of the first films ever released in IMAX, like the full 2-hour film.
It was actually, and they make a note of that. It was just back in 2007 and got an IMAX release.
I just have a really distinct memory of sitting in the very front row of the IMAX in the very left-hand corner with like the back of my head in between my shoulder blades. So I think like...
That's how I saw Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan.
And did you enjoy that movie?
No,
yeah,
I did not.
I think because I really disliked 300, but now in retrospect, I think it had more to do with how I watched it than what it is, because I never really returned to it or cared much about it until reading this now. Reading this now, I'm like, I might actually like the movie. You know?
I actually, it's funny because I reread the book and then went and saw...
You guys covered it all. I don't need to say anything.
And that's another show. You make a good point because I reread the book and then went and watched the movie again immediately afterwards. Admittedly, I started watching it at 2 o'clock in the morning, but that was probably not my greatest idea. But having rewatched it again after reading the book, I did actually get more out of the film. And I sort of remembered it as this kind of visceral, fast-moving, fast-slow, fast-slow, fast-slow kind of approach that Zack Snyder's taken in every film since.
And funnily enough, it's not quite that bad.
No, and in fact, I think this is probably him being his most competent in a lot of ways, because he'd only come off, I think, Dawn of the Dead.
Really uses the fast-slow stuff to accentuate moments of the war porn.
Yeah, because he actually, there's probably usually when he wants to accentuate one of the panels from the book.
Yeah.
Which we should say... Frank Miller's art is wonderful in this, but again, what sells it is a great colorist and inker. Lynn Varley, his ex, is doing phenomenal things there as well. So don't, you know, they are an inseparable team.
Yeah.
So when we talk about Frank Miller's 300, we're also talking about Lynn Varley's 300 just as much.
Good point you guys bring up about the slow motion. Because was that done much before this? Was this the start of that?
It really was, I think. I mean, slow motion.
Maybe The Matrix?
Matrix used slow motion in different ways.
It's the time ramping. It's like fast then slow.
Yeah, it's the ramping. It's the speed ramping that Zack really brought to cinema. Seen a bit of it here and there and so forth, but Zack Snyder made it an art form.
It's completely, it sort of made it a staple of action films. I think ever since. I think everyone uses it now. And you know, Snyder certainly uses it in every other film. Everything from, you know,
Sucker Punch to
Man of Steel, you know. Although not as much in Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, he's kind of pulled back on it a little bit. Now,
yeah, so. He actually went at breakneck speed in that one.
He actually probably needed to do it. Man of Steel.
He went at breakneck speed in that one.
Spoilers.
I guess the movie's pretty seminal, isn't it, then, with how often it's been copied? And even like, last month there was that Hercules movie that seemed to be exactly this. Pompeii.
Is that Rennie Harlan's Hercules?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that we can't find playing anywhere.
Anyway, no.
That's a pretty big deal, like a movie made like that long ago and still being copied.
I think that the film is significant for two reasons, and this, to bring it back to the comic, the film is significant because you're right, it created a style which is highly imitable and completely identifiable with Zack Snyder, but also because it was so faithful to the visual style of a book. And you know, yes, Sin City had done it beforehand, but Sin City had a very particular look that Rodriguez wanted to recreate on screen. 300 had a look that they could have gone a million different directions with. They didn't have to.
It could have been like the 60s version. It could have just been a straight film.
It could have been a big Lord of the Rings-esque kind of film, which was the style at the time. That was what was hot right then. But instead, it was the very strong visuals of this book, which were already cinematic, that you could lift. And that's what this is, a testament to the book, that you could lift this book straight off the page, put it on screen, and it worked perfectly.
Also, the film had one thing going for it. Well, actually, it had a few things going for it. But the
for a group of people who weren't going to talk about the film.
No, well, I'm not talking about the sequel. We'll save the sequel. But this film also had a really important point to mark, is that it had the charisma of Gerard Butler.
Yes.
If you didn't have Gerard Butler in this film...
Well, actually, more to the point, it had the charisma of Gerard Butler, but it also had the strong character of Leonidas.
Yes.
And while I'm sure... the character's name has slipped me in the sequel.
I can't remember his name at all.
It's a much longer Greek name. We'll remember it for GMC. Go and listen to that. The character just wasn't as engaging or interesting.
No, and interestingly enough, I completely forgot until watching again, and he's fantastic.
Michael Fassbender
I know. Is so good.
He's got one of the best lines, which is straight from the comic as well, which is, you know, we'll block out the sun with arrows, and he responds with, then we'll fight in the shade. Which is, and all of those cool break, you know, all those cool bits of dialogue from the film, they're straight from this
From the book, straight from Miller's pen.
Now, before we get into feedback this week, let's wrap this up really quickly by saying we think this book is...
This is Comics 101.
Absolutely.
This is Sparta.
This is comics. This is a book. This is a hardback book that deserves to be on the shelf of every comic collector.
Even if it sticks out a little further.
Even if it
books.
Sticks out a further, because this is a masterpiece.
These warriors are more than men. They're Spartans. No, honestly, this is... It won a bunch of Eisner Awards, Harvey Awards. It's one of those books that... It's a no-brainer. It was groundbreaking as a comic book. It was groundbreaking as a film. Both of them work, I think, as companion pieces very, very
well. Yeah, I would actually say that if you own a Blu-ray player, you should have this book and you should have the Blu-ray.
Even if
the
Blu-ray does have that whole sort of swarm of mosquitoes look to it because of that whole...
And almost black and white in places.
It's funny. I was watching it with a filmmaker friend the other night, and he said, how did they light this shot? Like, how the hell did they do this? Where it was like one of them was almost glowing and the Persian was like just not lit at all.
Yeah.
And it was just... It's
mind-blowing. The filmmaking is mind-blowing. You sit there looking at it going... You know, a lot of it's green screen. I mean, most of it's green screen. But you sit there watching it going...
I think it was blue screen, in fact.
Well, actually, blue screen. You're absolutely right, because it was chemical yeah. because it was shot on film. But yeah, no, it's a remarkable, remarkable piece of film. It really is.
Yeah, and look, you know, we highly recommend the book. So all those people who write into us each time and go, you know, you're making me spend a lot of money. We're going to make you spend some more.
You got to go out and spend at least 30, 40 bucks on this one.
This is why we do this show. This is so we can read classics like this and recommend them.
And we got a classic next week too.
We do have a classic next week. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But for now, let's hit up some home shopping. No, let's hit up some girlfriend Ipanema and lose a bit of feedback. Hey guys.
Hey guys.
I get to put on my sexy voice now. We actually had a bunch of feedback this week. I'm going to... first of all, I'm going to mention our friend Jeffrey Withy, who writes into us a lot, sent me a tweet this week saying that he was wrapping up his job and his co-workers, because he'd been banging on about it for ages, bought him a copy of Arkham Asylum as his first comic.
Hey!
And he's read it. He's a big horror fan. He said his mind was blown. So what an amazing set of co-workers to start with. And what an amazing read for your first comic. So, you know...
Amazing stuff.
Bless. Go, now you've got all these issues to go back and find more comics.
Now you've got to buy a copy of 300.
Yeah. Go and set up a wish list somewhere on Amazon. Yeah. We got an email from our longtime listener, Mitchell Deacon.
Oh, yes.
Who is also known as Rogue Sire, for those of you in the old school network. He said, hey, guys, I've been thinking and I have... Oh, he's been thinking. Rogue Sire's been thinking.
That can hurt.
This could be dangerous. He says, I have a request. Would it be possible for you guys to add a Comics 101 list to your website? No, too much work. Goodbye. I'm currently reading Sandman. I'm currently reading Sandman and thinking my next purchase will be Flashpoint. I was hoping you could provide an easy to read list of your favourites and or highly recommended comics so you can choose my next purchase. Can't wait to hear next episode. Keep up the good work, Mitch Rogue Sire. He's got some other feedback there about GMC, which we'll read out on the other show.
The list already exists. It's called Previous Shows.
Yeah. Look, actually, that's a really good idea. If I find time when I'm not doing a million other things, I think that's something I'd like to put together as a permanent link on the site of books we think you should read.
Yeah.
Just, you know, classics. Just Comics 101. Mm. Let's do it. We also got a bit of feedback. Last week we read out an email from a new listener, Kate.
Oh, my future wife. That's right. Yeah.
David, you're already married.
Oh, I forgot. Sorry.
Spoilers, sweetie.
Dave's future wife.
The listener who we're about to lose because...
I'm saying I love her.
We got the coolest bit of feedback last week that made us all swoon and we really loved it. But to Richard, David and Dave...
They love us. They really do.
Just a quick note to say I am now up to date with the podcast. Woohoo! The emphasis on the woohoo was my addition there. And it was a nice surprise to hear my feedback being read out in the last. Made my day. Thank you for answering all my questions, and I have all your suggestions on my wish list ready and waiting whenever I have some spare money. So now I will get back to my reading and wait patiently until next week and listen to you guys again, and you'll hear your comment being read out again. poor again, but happily reading, Kate.
Sent from my iPad.
iPad, yeah. So that was wonderful. We had a final comment that came through.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you again, Kate. No.
And Dave will marry you.
People.
Proposal coming next week.
Next week on That's Behind our pick the Panel. Of the week. David proposes to a listener. David gets shot down.
That would make great radio.
Yeah. Great, because we record to hard drive. We can edit it out when it all goes wrong. Finally, Craig Bruin wrote into our Facebook page. There's another way. If you want to contact us, if you want to send emails, remember it's feedback@behindthepanels.net. If you want to tweet us, you can tweet. We'll read out all our Twitter addresses at the end of the show. But there is a @behindthepanels Twitter account as well. But if you want to hit up our Facebook, just look up Behind the Panels.
There's also
Facebook.
An @geek actually, but I never do anything with it. But if you want it, there's an @geek actually.
There's all that
I
as
heard
well.
if you type our thing into Google, you'll get us.
Apparently, yes. Yeah. Google can find things.
Yeah. Cool.
So it's better than Yahoo.
Craig Bruin writes to us on Facebook.
Let's ask Jeeves.
And says, just discovered the podcast recently, guys. Love it. Just listened to an interview with the Purcell brothers in issue 74. Great guys. They came into the studio,
yeah,
actually.
Great.
Great stuff. Looking forward to having such a back catalogue of episodes to explore. And you know what? If you're up to date with the podcast, you've just heard your name mentioned. There you go. How's that?
Isn't that cool?
Wow, that's some trippy stuff.
And if you want your name mentioned on the show, you can send it to feedback@behindthepanels.net.
Or hit us up on Facebook, or hit us up at the Twitter addresses, which we'll mention in just a moment. But next week, we will be doing another classic, this time by Alan Moore.
The other big guy.
The other big M. I want to start up a convention. Called the Triple M Convention, and it's just Miller, Moore, and Morrison.
Oh yeah,
reading Moon Knight and Magneto,
and all other creators just have to change the name to M's.
Wait,
we'll have Melly Moo.
There's Warren Ellis.
Brian Michael. Forget the Bendis part.
Yeah, he'll change his name to Brian Michael Mrendis.
Yeah, there you go.
For the purposes of that show. But yes,
Marf Ennis and
Mark Millar.
Mark Millar will only deal with Marvel books, apparently. So, but next week, yes, we will be doing V for Vendetta by Alan Moore and David Lloyd. So. It's a slightly bigger book.
Chunky read.
It's a chunky read, but then again, it's written by Alan Moore.
It's a chunky read because it's also incredibly dense.
Yeah, that's the thing. So is, we've just set ourselves a challenge.
So get started now.
For next week. Until then, you can find me, Richard Gray, on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at behindthepanels.net, therealbits.com sometimes, and occasionally on newsarama.com.
And you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Or as I said, there's also an @geekactually. But I'd never look at it.
You can find me on damngoodcop.com or at Dave Longo on Twitter and proposing to Kate, apparently.
I mean, apparently, you're the one who made the claim.
I did. And the RSVPs will be going out soon.
Not that there'd be anything wrong with that.
Do you realize we just lost our newest best listener?
No, we haven't, because she's lovely.
We love you, Kate.
I love her.
Fine, I think we should see other people, though.
Richard!
I'm just saying I'm keeping my options open.
Okay, fair enough.
Until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Dave Longo, apparently.
And this is Behind the Panels.